Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. So glad you can join me where I am every week right here on WLIW 88.3 FM Southampton, serving Eastern Long Island and Southern Connecticut, 96.9 in Western Suffolk, and streaming at wliw.org/radio and on your favorite streaming platforms. Each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com and distributed on my podcast via Audio Boom and iTunes. Support for this program comes from Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 28th, TPC River Highlands, travelerschampionship.com for more information. First off, huge congratulations to Nelly Korda, who won the U.S. Women's Open at iconic Riviera Country Club in Pacific Palisades, California. She is the first American since 1986 to win the season's first two majors. Korda won the Chevron Championship a few months ago. Nelly Korda was tied for 56th place and was seven shots behind the leader after the first round at the U.S. Open, which tied the all-time record for the largest 18-hole deficit overcome to win the U.S. Women's Open. Korda needed to put in a 2.5-foot birdie on the final hole to win, and her birdie putt almost completed a 360-degree turn around the inside tip of the cup before dropping in the cup, making the finish even more exciting. Korda, she had an overall score of 8-under-276. She beat England's Charlie Hall and Mexico's Gabby Lopez by only one shot. It was the fifth time Charlie Hall actually has finished runner-up in a major championship. What a finish it was indeed. So with Nelly Korda's victory, the 27-year-old needs only two more points to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame. She now holds three different major titles, and she could complete the career Grand Slam by winning either the Amundi Evian Championship or the AIG Women's British Open. Even though there are actually five major championships for the women, a player only needs to win four different majors to achieve a career Grand Slam. Now, the U.S. Open, as you know, begins Monday at Shinnecock Hills Golf Club, right here in Southampton, New York. Practice rounds are Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the four-day competition starts Thursday. Now, if you missed my interview with Jack Druga, who was the head golf professional at Shinnecock from 2007 to 2022, you can download Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. That show is available to hear on the Odyssey app, Apple, and Spotify. And we discuss everything you need to know about the 126th U.S. Open at Shinnecock, and look back on the last time the U.S. Open was at Shinnecock, which was in 2018, when Jack Druga was still at the helm as the head golf pro at Shinnecock. So we have a lot to discuss, and I think you will learn a lot about the U.S. Opens at Shinnecock. And I personally have had the pleasure of covering the last four U.S. Opens at Shinnecock Hills, and I can't wait for this upcoming edition. Now, this year at Shinnecock, there will be 13 players from LIV Golf competing. Bryson DeChambeau is back due to his 10-year exemption for winning the 2020 and 2024 U.S. Opens. 2021 U.S. Open champion John Rahm will be playing. Dustin Johnson, he won the U.S. Open in 2016 at Oakmont. This will actually be his final year of exemption from that win for DJ. Cameron Smith, Tyrell Hatton, Carlos Ortiz, Joaquim Niemann, Lucas Herbert, Laurie Cantor, David Puig, Peter Uihlein, Graham McDowell, and Caleb Surratt are other LIV players who also qualified, and you will see them at the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. I'm actually going to be doing a U.S. Open preview talk and book signing on Sunday, June 14th from 5 to 7 in the evening at Finley's Fiction, which is the new bookstore in Southampton, located at 43A Jobs Lane. I'll share stories of covering the past four U.S. Opens at Shinnecock and describe what to expect at this upcoming edition of the U.S. Open at historic Shinnecock Hills. So I do hope you can make it. Plus, wine and cheese will be served. Can't miss that. I tell you, it has been a busy week. Filmmaker, actor, and East End resident Ed Burns hosted the premiere of his new independent film, Finnegan's Foursome. It debuted in New York City at the Tribeca Film Festival, and I headed into Manhattan to see it. Finnegan's Foursome was filmed in Ireland with spectacular scenes of them playing Carn golf links in Balmullet, Ireland, County Mayo. And as an honorary member of Carn and the president of the Carn Golf Club International Members Association, the film holds a very special place in my heart. Now, in this edition of Sports Interview, you will hear my conversation with Ed Burns about Finnegan's Foursome, the inspiration behind the film, its themes of family, friendship, and golf as a metaphor for life, and why Ireland provided the perfect backdrop. You will also hear my conversation with Nathan Grube, tournament director of the Travelers Championship, one of the PGA Tour's signature events, which takes place the week following the U.S. Open. Nathan shares why the Travelers has become one of the tour's most popular stops. He also discusses the outstanding field expected at TPC River Highlands and explains how the tournament has thrived on the PGA Tour schedule immediately following the U.S. Open Championship. An interesting scheduling position for the Travelers Championship. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. And as you regular listeners know, I enjoy talking with personalities from the worlds of Hollywood, music, and sports about their success stories and their passion for golf. Joining me now is Ed Burns, actor, producer, director, writer, editor, New York's own Ed Burns. And Ed is best known for his independent film, The Brothers McMullen, which achieved worldwide success. He also did Sidewalks of New York, Ash Wednesday. He appeared in films such as Saving Private Ryan, The Holiday, 27 Dresses, to name a few. Ed's latest independent film is Finnegan's Foursome, his first film shot and produced abroad. The comedy follows two competitive Irish-American brothers and their children as they travel to Ireland after the death of their father, a well-known professional golfer, to scatter his ashes and continue the family's long-running golf tournament in his honor. Now, the film holds special meaning for me because many of its most memorable scenes were filmed at spectacular Carn golf links in Balmullet, Ireland, in County Mayo, where I am a proud member and serve as president of the International Members Association. Welcome to Talking Golf, Ed Burns.
And thank you so much for having me. And I just have one question out of the gate. Did we do justice to Carn as far as showcasing the beauty that is that unbelievably magnificent course?
Oh my gosh, the cinematography was spectacular. And you got it on some gorgeous days, too. So, and there were some great shots there, by the way, too. So all those questions. Did you have to wait for a gorgeous day? Or tell me a little bit of the history behind the weather there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, like when you're playing golf, you talk about the golf gods all the time, right? How periodically they help you out, but most of the times they don't give you that break. It's the same is true when you're making a film. You know, we always talk about the movie gods, and it's usually applied to the weather. For some reason, and you know the weather out there in County Mayo, you can get, and I know it's a cliche, but all four seasons can show up in one day. We were out there to shoot that entire sequence. I think we were there for a week, 5 days of shooting. And you've been there enough to know that you don't get four or five blue sky days in a row. We did.
Oh, like, man.
It was, and then, you know, we had our fifth day. We had to come, you know, and again, you're shooting a single round of golf over the course of 4 days. So you want, from a continuity standpoint, that weather to look fairly consistent. But the morning of the fifth day, it was one of those. The rain was whipping left to right through the air. There was no way any of it was going to match. So we started to think of what else can we shoot? Maybe we'll just shoot some insert shots of gloves and hands and, you know, tight shots of putts rolling in. And no sooner do we set up for the first shot, the clouds break, the sun comes out, we get a fifth day of sun, and we finish strong. So we got lucky.
I love it. The golf gods were good to you. And, you know, I've been to Ireland, throughout the country of Ireland and Northern Ireland, where there was sunshine for 4 or 5 straight weeks. I mean, a couple of summers ago, there was a drought there. And that was so unusual, as you know, because you do get 4 or 5 seasons in a day. But what inspired you to write Finnegan's Foursome, Ed?
So it's interesting. It came from a number of different places. And, you know, anytime I'm writing a screenplay, very rarely do I have one idea that, oh, this is the story I want to tell. I make character-driven films, and usually I start with characters. This was more starting with an incident. You know, about 6 years ago during COVID, my mom passed away. She was cremated. We couldn't have a service for almost a year. And finally, when we were able to have a service out on our church on Long Island, my dad wasn't really in any shape to think about what the burial might be. We figured we'd figure that out later. Because my mom was cremated, I had her ashes in our apartment in the city. So I told my dad, what we'll do is after the service, let's take my mom's ashes and we'll distribute them in all of her favorite places in New York City. My mom went to high school on 68th and Lex. She grew up in the South Bronx. Our first apartment was in Woodside, Queens. We were out in Long Island. So those were going to be the spots. Now, when you're distributing people's ashes in public places, we didn't ask for permission. So when we went to her church, kind of a funny thing happened, right? Like, it's me and my dad, and you know that it's an emotional and it's a sad day. And as we step into that church where my parents were married, you know, my dad was, you know, he was emotional. We walk down the altar and suddenly a priest appears. Now we can't throw the ashes because the priest is there. We don't have permission. So my dad says, look, I'll talk to the priest. When he turns his back, you grab a fistful of ashes, throw it on the altar.
Oh my
and that's
gosh.
What we did. All right.
Really?
Yeah. And we leave the church laughing. And I was like,
oh my
okay,
gosh.
That's the way my mother would have loved to have been grieved. Right. So I would say, you know, maybe 2 months later, as I reflected back on that day, I was like, okay, there's a lot in here I have to figure out one day to use in a film.
Sure.
And that sort of gave birth to part of the idea for this movie, where we take our father's ashes back to Ireland to be distributed in some meaningful places, including 2 golf courses, one of which was Carn. The second bit of inspiration was when my dad is a sicko golfer. He loves to play. At the time, he was 83 years old. So I said, I'm going to pick up this game to spend more time with him. The thing that happened that I did not anticipate was I became even more of a sicko golfer than him. As we were just discussing, I would play every day if I could. So my wife then, after about 2 years, asks me, all right, so is this now more important to you than your work? And I had remembered an old Martin Scorsese quote where he said, you know, it's the role of a filmmaker, storyteller, to make your passions, your obsessions as interesting as to your audience as they are to you. So I was like, all right, golf is my new love, my new passion. I'm a filmmaker, a storyteller. How am I going to marry those two? And that's kind of, with all of that kind of brewing, is how the idea of this film was born.
Wow. Well, first of all, going back to the church and, you know, throwing a fast one at the priest or pulling a fast one at the priest. I mean, that's just a crazy story. I love that story. And, you know, Christy Turlington, your wife, just incredible model, gorgeous actress and model. I mean, she was being serious now. She put you to the test here with, you know, with the question about, you know, your passion for golf versus your passion for work. That was a serious question, don't you think?
I have to admit, part of it was in jest because I'm a workaholic and I write every day and I love to write. But part of it was, okay, you know, maybe it was after a day where I had gone out for 3 straight days. But when she said it, what it did was it sparked the idea of, oh, wait, why not sit down and write a golf story? So I have to give her kind of the credit for sort of sparking the idea of making a film about golf.
And marrying your two passions, which is perfect. I mean, there's nothing better, right? So how long have you been playing the game, and did your father teach you golf?
I have only been playing for 6 years. I played for a couple of years in the 90s, you know, after Brothers McMullen. I made a little money. I was spending a lot of time as a young actor out in Los Angeles. I got invites through a bunch of people out there to some tournaments and got to play some great courses. And I look back on that time and, you know, I was a terrible golfer. I had no appreciation of what an invite to Riviera meant. You know what I mean? Because I didn't know anything about the game. But this time, when I picked the game up 6 years ago, I made a costly error in that I didn't take any lessons for about 2 years, and I was terrible. And then finally, a friend suggested, "What are you doing? Like, just take lessons if you love this game so much." And that just completely changed my game. And now, you know, it's like I said, I think about golf every day. I'm reading something about golf every day. I'm listening to golf podcasts, including yours, you know, long before we met. So
thanks for that.
I just eat it up. I mean, I love it.
Well, to get a handicap like below 10, to literally have a single-digit handicap in only 6 years is quite remarkable. So you're doing something right, for sure.
Spending a lot of time out there grinding, you know.
You're working hard at it. Well, golf has often been described as a metaphor for life, as you know. I write about that subject a lot. But what life lessons or themes did you hope audiences take away from this film?
You know, it's interesting. There are two things. You know, like I had a round maybe 3 years ago, because I once I started playing, I lured my son into playing the game as well. And we were at a course that I'm sure you know, Montauk Downs, out on the east end of Long Island.
Oh, sure. Great public course.
We played a late afternoon round. The sun was low in the sky. It was a little misty out. And I was with my dad and my son. All right. And we're walking down the 17th fairway. And, you know, like there are those it's kind of like magical little moments where just like you're at peace. I'm looking at my family and we're all just having a good time. Nobody's on their phone. Everyone had hit a nice drive. And it was a special moment that when I was writing the screenplay, I'm like, how do I create that? You know, because it wasn't about hitting a great shot. You know, there's all those metaphors that we could talk about, like, you know, playing it as it lies and dealing with, you know, the hardship that the game brings you, and integrity and honesty and keeping your own score. But this was a different kind of almost mystical moment where there was so much like just joy. Like we were just like a family at peace. So this is a scene late in the film. We're on the 17th. We actually didn't shoot it on the 17th hole, I think, at Carn. But it's that par three at Carn where we bring out the old hickory shafted club. And
sure,
afterwards, it's just like a little montage of the family sort of rolling their putts and giving high fives and walking off the course together. And that's what I tried to create. So whatever those things are that the game gives you, that's been my favorite part.
Obviously, yeah, the bonding and, you know, it's just a great experience, as you say, with your family and friends. And those family relationships are central to the story, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds so wonderful that, you know, so much of these moments in the film are based on moments from your real life.
Yeah. Well, it's also funny, you know, like once I started to write the script and I built out the framework of what the story was going to be, the fact that we would have this, you know, ongoing family tournament, you know, the Finnegan's Cup dating back to Ireland in the 1920s, and that when the movie opens, where the game is moved to the States, we're down in South Carolina, the old man dies. Once all that framework was done, I had to figure out, well, how am I going to build out these golf sequences that they'll be interested or interesting to not just golfers, but people who don't love golf. So one of the things, there's a great scene in The Natural, the Robert Redford film. It's early in the movie, and it's a scene where there's a challenge. Can Roy Hobbs strike out Babe Ruth? All right? And it's just a simple little sequence. But what it does is it sets up a challenge. We identify who the hero is and who the villain is. And the audience is immediately invested in, can Roy strike out Babe Ruth? There are no stakes. It's not a game. They're in just a field. I forget why they were all there. And I thought, okay, that's the key for this movie. This isn't a professional golf tournament. This is a family golf tournament with four mid-handicap golfers with ugly swings. So I don't want anyone to think that this is like Tin Cup and we're, that the stakes are real. Right, it's just pride and sibling or familial rivalries. But I knew, built into every shot, if I could set an obstacle or a goal, and that there would be very little just guys hitting the ball. Like it had to have something that a non-golf fan could be invested in seeing, like the long drive competition that my character and Brian D'Arcy. James's character have as we're within the round. So that was helpful. The other thing is, as I started to, go out and play with all of my friends, everyone has great golf stories, right? They have the story of the hole in one or a crazy, worm burning eagle or someone who was cheating or just silly smack talk. So, I would have my phone with me and I just started taking notes. And I got to tell you, probably a dozen of those stories I heard on the golf course ended up in the movie.
Absolutely. I mean, so many themes, overcoming fear. I mean, the female character had never really played golf before in real life, right?
Yep.
And she learned and had a pretty decent swing, right,
for
not playing. And having patience. And do you most relate to your character in the film? Or what character
Absolutely
fitting
not.
Its force do you most identify with? Because, I mean, if you're like that, there's a lot of trash talking going around.
Oh,
and some anger there, too.
Well, it's funny. Like, we have all played with a type of golfer that I play in this movie. Like, I wanted the character I created for myself to be a bit of a horse's ass. He is the guy who's prone to throwing his clubs, snapping his putter over his knee, screaming and yelling at the ball, sulking, all of those things you hate when that guy shows up in your foursome. So I knew he would be the villain in our story and I would play that part. So no, I am absolutely not that guy.
Good to hear.
I just kind of love being out there. If I have a crappy round, I have a crappy round. You know what I mean? So if anything, my personality on the golf course is a lot more like Brian D'Arcy James's character, who plays my brother in the film.
Right.
He's very even keeled and chill, and only when his obnoxious brother gets him too much might he throw a little smack talk back at him.
Who of the cast is actually the best golfer in real life?
Hands down, the kid who plays my son, an actor, Brian Muller. I met him when he acted in a television series I made a couple of years ago called Bridge and Tunnel. And I was writing the golf screenplay in between seasons 1 and 2 of that show. And he and I went out to play golf one day. And I told him, I'm working on this script, with this idea of a family golf tournament that goes to Ireland. And we're on the first tee box, and he gets up. And I mean, that swing of his is gorgeous, and he bombs the hell out of the ball. And I was like, okay, Brian, you're going to be in the movie and you're going to play my son. So hands down, golf in Ireland, and you know how gorgeous Carn is. When we were making the movie, on the weekends or because it got dark so late in the day there, we were shooting in the summer, it didn't get dark till 11 o'clock. So if we wrapped at 6, we'd grab a quick meal and then go out on the golf course. The cast would go to play together. We laughed when we kind of called this a job, if you will, or work, because it really wasn't. But anytime we played, Brian Muller was hands down the best golfer of the bunch.
Right. And I had the chance to talk to Erica Hernandez, who plays your niece. Lovely, lovely. And Brian Darcy, James, just so much fun. Just a charming, charming guy. And but, you know, a lot of your shots, you had some chip-ins. You had some, you know, great putts. I mean, how long did it really take to get some of those really good shots filmed?
Well, it's funny, you know, Erica Hernandez, who you'd mentioned, had never played golf before. But what we did with her is, like, you know, when you're an actor and you have a fight sequence, you know, you work with trainers and choreographers to make sure you look like a fighter or a boxer or whatever it is. So with Erica, what we did was before we let her hit a golf ball, we found her a teaching pro who would teach her the swing the way you would learn a dance move. So never thinking about contact, because we knew we could, through visual effects, do that later on. But if she could just learn the swing the way you would learn a dance sequence, it would look like, as you said, a pretty good swing for someone who'd never played before. Now, she would readily admit this, when we did have to have her hit the ball, immediately the elegant swing turns into, you know, you're looking to hit the ball and make contact. But to answer your question, I would say there are a handful, there's a handful of, like, kind of amazing shots that we did make. But what we would do is we would just roll the camera and have a bucket of balls out of frame and just drop a ball, let's say, in front of Brian Muller as he would try and do, you know, that a hole out of chip from, you know, from 30 yards out. But he would get 40 chances to do it.
Right.
And one of them would go and we'd go nuts. There is one funny story where the shot where we have the hole in one. We were trying, we knew that potentially how hard it would be to do that, right?
Sure.
So we knew we would probably do that with visual effects. But we figured we'd give the golf pro at Carton House, a guy named Liam McCool. I don't know if you know him at all, but
yeah,
great guy, great actor. So we set him up on the tee box and the idea was our camera guys would try and catch his ball in flight and then do the pan down to the green, and let's see if he could at least get it close to a hole in one, and then maybe the visual effect is just the last couple of rolls or something like that. However, when you're shooting a film, we're using different cameras than they use to shoot a golf event. So it's much harder to track the ball in the sky,
right?
And it's also harder to stay with it. But our operators were doing a great job. We were getting all of them, but then Liam hit one shot, the ball went up, we're tracking with it, I'm watching the monitor, the camera comes down, there's no ball, and then the entire crew goes nuts cheering. So Liam hit a hole in one, but we missed it with the camera.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And how often does that happen?
I know.
It's so hard for
nuts.
Those who aren't golfers. It's so rare to have a hole in one. I'm like, God, you must have just kicked yourself.
You know, the good thing is, you know, with visual effects today, we knew any shot that we wanted to create, we could do it pretty convincingly.
I know, right? Exactly. The magic of cinema, for sure.
Yep.
Well, what was it like filming in Balmullet and working with the local community when you were doing the shots at Carn?
I mean, first of all, you know, Jerry Maguire and Fiona at Carn could not have been more welcoming and gracious to us. They kind of, you know, anything that we needed, they just sort of bent over backwards to make sure that we would have the easiest time filming on that golf course. We also, you know, there's that scene in the film where the family dedicates a bench with the father's "Lash 'em straight" saying up there. You know, we knew that we wanted that to be like a substantial big wooden bench. When we finished shooting, I said to Jerry, I said, so, you know, let me know. I promise you we'll get that bench out of there, you know, when we wrap. And he's like, oh, no, please. Would you just please leave it up on that tee box? So I know it's still there today, which is pretty awesome because I've seen
on
Instagram.
How many pictures I've taken sitting on that bench?
Oh, really? So we
That's
stole that
priceless.
Idea because of the bench on Ballybunion that I guess says close to heaven or CTH. So we kind of
sure.
like the idea. So we did that. But the town of Belmullet was so great. We all stayed there while we were shooting. You know the bar, I'm sure, that we had our wrap party at. And,
sure,
you know,
McDonald's pint, Pub.
Oh, my God. It was the best. So we had an incredible time. We did our own kind of trad session in the back room. You know, everybody in the crew, for the most part, can either play guitar or fiddle and sing. As you saw, my cast all have great voices. So we did. We had a great, great night there.
Oh, my God. What a blast, really. So, you know, looking back on your trips, how many times now have you been to Ireland?
Well, I've been with my family a number of times, but I've worked there twice because famously down in Wexford is where we shot the D-Day sequence in Private Ryan. So yeah. So I've gotten to shoot there twice, and it's kind of like we all remember, you know, in shooting that sequence, how incredible, the crews were. So I knew that would be true coming back here all these years later, and it was true. You know, our crew based out of Dublin was fantastic.
So what does Ireland mean to you?
Oh yeah,
as a golf destination.
Yeah. So, like I said, my mom's family was from Westmeath, Mullingar. So we had gone back. We'd gone to the family house a number of times, but that was all before I started playing golf. So once I get into the game, all of my golf buddies are like, you're Mr. Ireland, and you've never done the Irish golf trip. So I have a buddy, Joe Faunin, who his family's from there. He spent every summer there. He organizes these trips. He's like, Eddie, we're going to set up the trip. So I set up my first trip a couple of years ago, and we played Carn. And I'm going back on in a couple of weeks. And we're going to Royal County Down, Port Rush.
Royal Port Rush. Where they hosted the Open Championship.
Yep.
Last year.
Port Monarch down in Dublin.
Oh, you'll love it, right?
Yep. And then we'll probably end up at Carton House because a couple of us are going to stay a couple extra days. And then I'm back in July for the Galway Film Festival.
They can't wait. The Carn folks cannot wait to go to that screening.
Great.
I've heard from all of them. They're just so excited.
Great. So on that trip, where we screen on a Sunday, that Monday I'm going up to Carn.
That's awesome. So you're going back and hopefully kind of relax and just have fun, have a couple pints, and just play golf.
Exactly. It'll be very different to be on that golf course, not thinking about where the camera has to go.
Exactly. So if you could organize and play with any foursome, including yourself, in the world, who would the other three people be? I mean, who would your favorite foursome of all time be if you include yourself, and who would you pick?
I mean, it would be my dad and my son. My daughter and wife don't play. I have so many great golf friends that I would hate to exclude any one of them. But I would have to say my earliest sort of golf enabler was a guy named Billy Holt, who's still one of my best friends. We raised our kids together. And he's the one who kept inviting me out to some great courses, even when my game was lousy. And my dad considers him, another son. I would say that. I'd put my brother in there as well, as a potential fourth if Billy couldn't make it. But we have a healthy sibling rivalry, so sometimes those rounds aren't as fun as they should be.
I mean, that could be a sequel, I'm sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yep.
To Finnegan's foursome. Last question, Ed. Tell me about some future projects. I know you have a couple things cooking already.
Well, so interestingly, I go back to Ireland in August to act in a series called Greystones. It's 8 episodes shooting over there. And then I have a kind of another sports film that we're trying to get put together, which is called The Mighty Stags, which is a true story about the St. Agnes basketball team on Long Island in 1984, whose starting point guard was none other than Billy Donovan, who won a couple of national championships for Florida, coached the Chicago Bulls forever. So that's the next film we're going to try and get made.
I love it. You're always busy. It's such a pleasure to meet you in person, and we're definitely playing golf together.
You're
my newest golf buddy.
I can't wait.
Ed Burns of Finnegan's Foursome, continued success, and say hi to all the folks at Carn Golf Club in Balmollet for me when you get out there.
I definitely will. Thank you, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And the Travelers Championship at TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut, outside of Hartford, is right around the corner, June 22nd to the 28th. And joining me now to talk about this exciting PGA Tour stop is none other than Nathan Grube, the tournament director of the Travelers Championship. Welcome back to Talking Golf, Nathan.
And it is so good to see you. And I know when I see you, that means the tournament's right around the corner, so I'm like excited and terrified at the same time. So it's good to see you.
Well, you sit at the intersection of the PGA Tour, sponsors, players, fans, your host community. Your position is so very exciting. You wear so many different hats, but I can imagine it's very, very challenging. How do you manage to do it all, to handle everything?
Oh, you have an incredible team, first of all, to be able to do something like this. And to your point, it kind of takes, there's kind of four pillars, right, to put on a tour event. You have to have a title sponsor, you have to have the PGA Tour, you have to have a golf course, and then you have to have a operator, a host organization to do it. So you have to have all four of those entities all trying to do the same thing, in my opinion, to get a really, really special tour event. Sometimes you might have two of those entities with a vision, and then the operator and the golf course may not think that what the tour and the title want to do. So it's always, a bit of just making sure everyone's on the same page. And we are so lucky up here to have an incredible title. Your listeners know Andy Bassett and the team from Travelers, but to be able to have them lay out a vision and then have the tour buy into it and have the host facility at TPC River Highlands buy into it and have our group and our board of directors, everybody's rowing in the same direction. And I think when you get that, you kind of have this special culture and this special vibe that allows you to do some things that maybe, you know, not every tournament is that fortunate to have all four of those entities going in the same direction. So we're lucky. We have a really good team. And I've been very, very fortunate to Andy and I have worked together from Travelers for 20 years. And the two key people on my team that work with me, Tara and Kevin, I've worked with them for 20 plus years as well. So to have kind of the core leadership team there for that long, it's we're able to do some pretty special things. You have everybody that's been around for that long, I guess you could say.
You definitely have a great team. I love covering the tournament. I love seeing you all down at the Masters when you have your dinner on a Tuesday. It's a very cohesive team, and you guys have been doing it for a long time. You're complete professionals, so congratulations for that.
Appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Now, the Travelers Championship also is, you know, it's scheduled right after the U.S. Open, and this year the U.S. Open is in my neck of the woods.
Yes.
At Shinnecock, right here in the east end of Long Island. So talk about, you know, the advantages and perhaps the disadvantages of being scheduled like a week after the U.S. Open.
So I would have told you, let's say 15 years ago, 16 years ago, when we, you know, got this date, like those first few years, we were like, wow, the week after the Open is going to be an uphill battle. You know, everybody just kind of, there was this feeling, you don't follow a major. It's too hard and things like that. And so, but I mean, you know, Andy from Travelers, you tell Andy not to do something and it's going to be like, oh yeah, like let's figure it out. So we just started like peeling back the onion of why is the week after the Open a bad date or perceived bad date? And I swear to you, Ann, every reason everybody came up with, we're like, wait, we can solve that. We can solve that. And so you kind of just start chipping away at it. And then all of a sudden it became this thing where, you know, the U.S. Open is always It's about the golf course, right? It's about the history of the course. It's about the course setup. It's about, I mean, the story is the course, you know, Shinnecock, Oakmont, Pebble, like that's the story. And so the players are coming out of an event where it's about the golf course and what they do. And so what we tried to do is we tried to lean into that and say, well, hey, guess what? The next week, it's going to be about you and your families and about this. And you're going to play at an absolutely awesome golf course for the fans. It's incredible theater. But when the guys come here, they feel like there's this deep breath you can feel of like, okay, it's about us as the athletes. Not that the U.S. Open isn't about them as the athletes, because they're performing on the greatest stage in some of the greatest tests of golf. But leaning into what we could the week after the Open, all of a sudden the guys started to look forward to playing us. You know, the family started wanting to come here, the caddies, the agents, the trainers, the media. Like, we try to lean into the fact that we want to treat these people as our customers and they are the center of the week, right? Like, we want you to feel like you're the center of the week. And when you're here, we are taking care of you. And we try to do that with every one of our constituents. And so it became this kind of culture of like, oh, we're the story at the Travelers Championship. We're the celebrities, you know, the players and things like that. And so it just has resonated with the guys, and it has turned into a week that I actually had, you know, a few years ago, somebody said to me, well, let me take you back. When we first got the date, I remember somebody in the media saying to me, what did you do to make the PGA Tour so angry that they gave you the week after the U.S. Open? And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a leading question, you know? And then, you know, 15 years later, I had somebody ask us, hey, what did you guys do to get so lucky to get the week after the U.S. Open? And you kind of had to chuckle, but there was, Andy and I kind of had this philosophy of, okay, the date is not going to make the tournament. The tournament is going to make the date. And we just kind of kept saying that to ourselves over and over, going, we're not going to let this date define us. We are going to define this date and make it be a good date. And we've been very lucky to have some good partners who have leaned in. And now, you know, with Shinnecock, though, to your point, whenever it's regionally right here, there's just so much more buzz, I would say, regionally that we get to draft off of.
Sure.
You know, the U.S. Open's promoting it. It's awesome out in Long Island. But what's kind of interesting this year is our broadcast partners flipped. And actually, we've been on CBS for 19 years. And NBC went to the tour and said, hey, we'd like to have the Travelers Championship to be part of our portfolio. And there was, you know, a lot of discussions. And now all of a sudden this year, NBC's covering the U.S. Open and they're covering us the next week. Wow. So there is a very different dynamic from an audience shift to how it's being talked about, because we've never been on the same network as the U.S. Open for the next week. So I think that's going to be an exciting element that's going to, you know, free up the media on the broadcast of the U.S. Open to kind of talk about what's going to happen the next week. So we're excited, I mean, about what the, you know, those couple weeks up here in New England are going to be for professional golf.
So new network after all those years with CBS. I'm sure CBS was sad to leave the Travelers. They did such a great job, but you know, with NBC and the Golf Channel's right there in Connecticut, so that has to have some advantages.
It honestly, it's one of those things where, to your point, I mean, the CBS team, they're our friends, right? We've known them for 20 years. We've grown up together, and Jim Nance has always been such a great partner. And who knows what's going to happen in the future, but it was a hard conversation to be like, wait, what's going to happen? You know, how's this going to work? But the NBC team completely leaned in, and they met with the Travelers leadership and, you know, said, hey, here's what we want to do with the event. And then the fact they are literally right down the street. So when you start to look at all the pieces of like, wait, Connecticut media company and NBC Sports, Travelers, Connecticut company, the Travelers Championship, what it means to this community, you kind of start to have this regional pride that is a different feel to it. And so I'm pretty excited about, we went down to the NBC Sports headquarters, you know, it's about 45 minutes from here. And we went down there when they first announced it and just kind of met with everybody and just like said, hey, this is going to be a regional family affair. Like, how are we going to do this together? And I think it's going to be pretty fun.
Very, very exciting for sure. And, you know, just speaking of the U.S. Open at Shinnecock, one of the toughest U.S. Open layouts on the rotation. And so the players, well, they'll be arriving just physically and mentally exhausted to the Travelers. Yeah. So tell my audience, if you would, Nathan, how the Travelers Championship really kind of embraces that aspect, because you go out of your way to make the players and their families and the caddies feel so comfortable.
So I guess let me just say this. The best way I can describe it is I've had the player families and some of the kids describe the Travelers Championship as Camp Travelers. Like they actually like, hey, we're going to Camp Travelers this year, some of the younger kids. And so that I think just kind of summarizes like we try to take care of everybody when they get here. And it starts with the players. We have charters coming out from Shinnecock for the players and their families. As your listeners know, I mean, that's a long, like you drive down back into the city and you go back up when you can basically see Connecticut, you know? So we did this, the last time the Open was at Shinnecock. We have some charters set up for the players, their families, their caddies. It's 12 minutes to be perfectly honest, you know, a little quick flight. So we start, we immediately take over the experience as soon as their experience ends at the US Open. And the USGA is great. They let us, you know, take their cars and drive them right up Plainside and do the charters for the players. And they're a good partner. But I mean, we take over the experience there. And then what happens when they land? We have gift bags for the kids. We have a whole, you know, airport committee. We actually do cars for the caddies and the players now. So the planes land, the caddies, it's all, everything's complimentary. Nobody's paying for their flights. And then they land at the airport and there's gift bags and there's people welcoming them. And then Andy and I are there welcoming the flights. And then all their cars are there, the caddies' cars, the players' cars. And we take their entire experience for those 7 days they're with us. They're our guests. And so whether it's the daycare programs, whether it's the hikes for the kids, whether it's the pool parties, whether it's we set up a big wiffle ball game on Thursday night, and we set up a fake green monster from Fenway for the kids, and they all get uniforms. And Keegan, actually, Bradley, our champion, he talked about the fact that his kids look forward to that wiffle ball game all year. And he actually uses it as a, hey, if you guys don't behave, you're not going to be able to play wiffle ball at Travelers, you know, like he uses it as a thing. So, we just really try to lean into it and lean into the fact that we're a signature event on the PGA Tour, and you have the best players in the world here. They're competing for $20 million. And like, you take care of as much as you can, but then it's so that they can do their job, you know, so they can go out there and they can perform. But we do a bunch of stuff for the wives too. We set up studios inside the clubhouse, and we do, you know, massages and treatments and things like that. And then we really just try to take care of everybody so that they walk out of here going, man, like that felt good. And that's what you love to hear when you have the player walk away.
Well, talk about the field. I mean, the Travelers Championship is, I believe, the eighth and final signature event, right, on the calendar. And I want to get into that in a second. But, yeah. I mean, defending champion Keegan Bradley, Scottie Scheffler, who won in 2024, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, Cameron Young, Chris Gutterup, Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, the list goes on. Matt Fitzpatrick. Talk about a great year so far. Matt Fitzpatrick and Chris Gutterup. And Scottie is just incredible as well. He's had a couple runner-up finishes this year as well as winning the Amex. Ricky Fowler, JT, Xander, Ludwig. I mean, you have them all. Almost everybody has committed, correct?
So I would say we're close. And what's crazy is your listeners notice the guys have until the Friday before to commit, right? It's always such a crazy business model to me that, you know, we were out there talking to the guys all year, but they can literally, you know, commit the week before, the Friday before. So Andy and I are always on the road talking to the guys, but it is, to have the field, I think we were looking at the list yesterday going, okay, of the guys eligible to play, there's obviously some guys in the top 50 that are not eligible to play us, you know, whether they're LIV or European players, you know, whatever it is. But I think 14 of the top 15 eligible to play us have already committed. I think we're at like 27 of the top 30 that are eligible have already committed. And I think 45 of the top 50. So like the numbers are rolling in. And that is, and the guys still have 2 weeks to commit. So we're still going to pick up a few stragglers, as I like to call them. But, I mean, I love that for the fans. And I remember years ago when we would have one of the top 50 and people would be so excited, you know, oh, my gosh, we're going to see so-and-so, you know, as the one guy. But now to have this type of event and Travelers Investment to make this a signature event, to be one of, you know, only eight on the PGA Tour schedule globally, like that is so big for this region. And the fans have responded. I mean, record ticket sales, record hospitality because of that. And then that translates into record charity numbers. You know, I mean, we crossed the $4 million mark last year. And I mean, I know we're going to beat it this year based off of how sales are going because all the net proceeds go to charities. And we have 245 charities that we work with that all get a piece of that. And when you start hearing their stories and you start seeing what they do with the money and you start talking to people that are impacted by the charitable giving of those events. And I mean, that just motivates you to work your butt off even more because you're like, oh my gosh, if we put on a better event than we did last year, we can raise another $1 million, $500,000, and we can impact another 20 charities. And it's just, it's a really unique and unbelievably fulfilling role to be able to run a PGA Tour event with an incredible team and that you know who you're working for. And who you're working for are those charities. And so if we do all that other stuff incredibly well, right? Best PGA Tour that we think, the best one we can run, the best players in the world love coming here. Like if we can do all that right, like we know who wins in the end. And you're going to get some amazing stories that that'll last, you know, impact people's lives. So that's a pretty big motivating factor.
So talk about notable players that you are still hoping will commit before the field is finalized.
Oh, I'm trying to think who hasn't committed yet, or at least who we've talked to. I know Rory's always an interesting one. I mean, he comes here a couple years and then he'll take a break, then he'll come. But he has become such a fan and friend of the tournament. He and Andy are very close, and he hasn't committed yet. I don't know what's going to happen. His world is so just after winning back to back at the Masters. But I do know that Rory loves this event. I know he loves coming here. He loves New England. It's so, you know, he was one who I think he still obviously has a couple of weeks. And I'm trying to think outside of that, pretty much everybody else we know, like I said, if they're eligible, they're coming.
Last question, Nathan. So when the gates open on that first Thursday of Travelers yes. Championship competition, where do we find Nathan Group?
Well, let's see. We will have just finished a security meeting to get ready. And I will probably I try to go see the first tee shot. I think it's 6:50, the first ball in the air. Like that is my goal all the time. But something usually happens between the 247 yards between the command center and the first tee that usually distracts me. But coffee will definitely be involved. I'm an absolute coffee nut, you know, so I will probably be on my sixth or seventh cup of coffee at that point. But you know, I try to get over to the first tee to see it. It's kind of special. You know, the crowds will be out there at 7 a.m. on Thursday like they always are. But it's a pretty cool thing to see something you've worked on all year. And then you hear that first shot and you're like, here we go. So that's my goal. I'm going to see if I can actually make it happen, though.
Well, I can't wait to see you up there again. 20th year as the tournament director of the Travelers Championship, Nathan. And you did a couple years before Travelers even became the sponsor. You continue to do great work. Always a pleasure to have you on Talking Golf, and be sure to buy your tickets at travelerschampionship.com, June 22nd to the 28th at TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut. Can't wait for it to start.
And can't wait to see you. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks so much. Nathan Group, Tournament Director of the Travelers Championship. Support for this program comes from Travelers Championship, June 24th through the 28th, TPC River Highlands, travelerschampionship.com for more information. Don't forget to come say hello this Sunday at Finley's Fiction in Southampton from 5 to 7 in the evening for my U.S. Open preview discussion and book signing of Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. 12 legends are in the book talking about their success stories and the lessons that they learn from golf that they bring to their day-to-day life. And they also talk about winning the U.S. Open. 5 of the legends in the book have won a collected 10 U.S. Opens. My thanks to Ed Burns, to Nathan Grube, and to Mike Goodsell in production. As Clint Eastwood once said, in quotes, they say golf is like life, but don't believe them. Golf is more complicated than that. End quote. How true, how true. Look forward to talking with you next time, right here on Sports Interview with Anne Liguori.